You are listening to the GMO Truth Podcast, straight out of the Walk a Mile Project, brought to you by nonprofit film company Change the World Films. Tune in here to discover the truth and change the world together. Eric Battersby here, ready to bring you episode number 7 of the GMO Truth. It hasn't been very long since our last podcast, but the news we're discussing here is way too important to hold back, so here we go, GMO Truth number 7 coming at you full speed ahead. Which reminds me, a big way you can help to get the podcast seen and heard by more people if you're listening via iTunes is to just click the subscribe button, which also means, of course, that you won't miss any of the podcasts. And another quick and easy way you can help is to give us a 5-star rating and a short review as well if you have the time. Every little bit helps, and as always, just like Bartles and James used to say, thank you for your support. One thing I want to mention really fast, this podcast and the next one are all about combing through EPA documents and data. So if that's not your thing, no worries. GMO Truth number 9, which we're in the planning stages for right now, will be interviews. So you'll probably find that a little more engaging if my sharp wit doesn't quite cut it for you on these more dry podcasts. Understand, though, they're all important and they all help us put together the story for the documentary. So everything has its place. Now, before we dive in, it is still May, but no big donor pitch this time. Just two quick things. Number one, we still need World Changer 20 donors. That's our core 20-person donor group where, with a $5,000 donation, you help us meet our annual minimum operating budget and keep the Walk a Mile Project moving along like lightning. And in turn, we send a bunch of really cool thank yous your way, like putting your name in the credits of every short and feature-length film we produce, a Platinum Film Festival pass, and a whole lot more. Head over to walkamileproject.com and click Join the Project on the main menu to find the World Changer 20 page where you can learn more and even sign up right online. Or just give us a call at 866-925-7037 and we can answer any questions you may have or get you signed up. And number two, we recently added a donate widget on all of the posts on the website as well. So if you'd like to just contribute a one-time only donation without any of the perks we provide, you can donate any amount you'd like really fast and secure right on our site. And remember, we are a 501c3 approved organization, so all donations are tax deductible. And one quick note on that, it really irritates me to no end when I see news like the kind that just broke last week about charities misspending funds on ridiculous things like dating sites and vacations. You know, part of the reason I started Change the World Films as a nonprofit in the first place was to run it very, very efficiently and to eventually become one of the most efficient nonprofits in the country. Even in our first full year here, well over 80% of our funding goes straight to our flagship program, the Walk a Mile Project, with very, very little in admin cost, and then the rest is allocated to fundraising. And we're pushing to get that over 85% this year, with a goal of over 90% in 2016. There is no reason to mismanage funds and break the public trust like that. I'm sorry, it really drives me crazy. When you run a nonprofit whose mission is to discover the truth and change the world, well, trust is of the utmost importance. But it should be of the utmost importance to every single charity in existence. All right, stepping down off the soapbox, so let's get into it. Last episode, we discussed the World Health Organization's new evaluation of glyphosate, as they declared the substance probably carcinogenic to humans and kicked off a whole new research path for us here at Walk a Mile. We went all the way back to 1974 when Roundup first hit the market and started digging all over the place, which resulted in the 5 potential problems with glyphosate we covered on that podcast. But nothing in that investigation really delved into this whole probable carcinogen hypothesis that the World Health Organization put out there. It seems a little much to think that the EPA would be duped into letting a probable carcinogen slip out in such mass quantity again, and that's a big part of why they were created in the first place. But unfortunately, I'm growing a little concerned, and a slight detour here, but last night I watched Gasland 2 on HBO, which is a film about fracking. And at the end, it gave a particularly sobering account of the EPA and corporate government agendas. I definitely recommend the movie, although I don't know much about fracking, and I certainly can't vouch for the facts presented in the film. But at the end, you'll hear of some pretty scary corruption at the EPA, and then you'll see something else quite disturbing. The filmmaker, his name's Josh Fox, he was arrested for trying to film a public hearing in Washington, D.C. A public hearing that was somehow declared off-limits for all media. It was an ugly, sobering finish to the film, but to witness a journalist being arrested while you hear other officials in the background trying to do a quick vote to allow him to stay, And it's just ugly, ugly stuff. To think that no one would just flat out step in and stop such a ridiculous action from happening, it is absolutely appalling. And to me, when you violate constitutional rights to such a blatant extent, that's an act of treason. And there needs to be a quick process in place within government to punish those kinds of actions so we can stop them from ever occurring. You don't arrest citizens for videotaping their own government. This isn't North Korea. We need to start taking action against any elected official who feels that it's in his or her power to deny us freedom of press. And you know what? If that kind of idiocy ever flows over into our GMO investigation, someone's getting impeached because we absolutely positively cannot allow that kind of oppression here in what's supposed to be the land of the free. Okay, off the soapbox again. I'm sorry. I better put this thing away or the podcast is going to run like 5 hours today. So back to the glyphosate concern. You already know that glyphosate hit the market in 1974, but did you know that back in March of 1985, an EPA committee classified glyphosate as a Group C carcinogen? And that was, and I quote, based on an increased evidence of renal tubular adenomas in male mice. So 11 years after stores first started selling Roundup, its active ingredient was noted to have suggestive evidence of carcinogenic potential by the EPA. What happened from that point forward could probably be an entire documentary in and of itself. Now, there were only a handful of studies used by the EPA to evaluate the oncogenicity, which means tumor forming, by the way, and then the carcinogenicity of glyphosate. And those studies, at least in their entirety, are still hidden from public viewing, despite being over 30 years old at this point. There were three key studies, two in rats and one in mice, and it's the mouse study that's been making the rounds on the internet of late, so we're going to dig into that one today, and we'll save the rat studies for the next episode. For the mouse study here, we're going to go document by document, and we're just going to stick to the facts and try to keep everything crystal clear. I've linked to all these documents on the podcast page at walkmileproject.com. They are numbered and in order, so you can literally follow along with these links to the EPA's website and see exactly what I'm referring to on the podcast here if you want to look at full documents instead of just what's in the video here. So the mouse study took place in July of 1983, and the first document is just the February 1984 review of that study. In it, the EPA determined that glyphosate was oncogenic, as it produced a rare tumor in a dose-related manner, and a risk assessment was then required by the EPA's toxicology branch. Fast forward an entire year later, and there was no real movement other than Monsanto trying to contest the EPA's findings. And that's in the second document here, which is from February of 1985. In this doc, Monsanto claimed that the rare tumors were unrelated to treatment, and to support their argument, they provided historical data on mice from Biodynamics. That's the lab they paid to do the mouse study in the first place, and then they gave data from two other laboratories as well. They also suggested that there might have been some false positives in the mice with tumors. Then, for close to three pages, an EPA statistician goes to great lengths in evaluating Monsanto's argument, and he concludes the following. Under such circumstances, a prudent person would reject the Monsanto assumption that glyphosate dosing has no effect on kidney tumor production. Another way of saying this is that if glyphosate were truly unrelated to kidney tumor production, we would expect to see four or more tumors in less than one out of 100 experiments of the type sponsored by Monsanto. Thus, glyphosate is suspect. Then, in response to the false positives assertion that Monsanto made, he gives multiple reasons, but here's what he states in the final summary. False positive results are less likely to occur with rare tumors, and the tumors in question are rare. Viewpoint is a key issue. Our viewpoint is one of protecting the public health when we see suspicious data. It is not our job to protect registrants from false positives. We sympathize with the registrants' problem, but they will have to demonstrate that this positive result is false. Finally, we mentioned that none of the tumors occurred in the control or low-dose groups. Instead, there was one at 5,000 parts per million and three at the 30,000 parts per million dose level. This, together with the previous comments, make it likely that there is a dose-tumor relationship for glyphosate. Okay then, for those of you keeping score at home, that's EPA 2, Monsanto 0. Which brings us to document number 3 on the list from the following month in March of 1985. There's a ton of information in here, including two other disturbing studies and then a bunch of other studies quickly referenced that are quote-unquote supportive of the non-oncogenic potential of glyphosate. which is what we'd want to hear. We'd want to hear that something that's already out there is not going to cause tumors. But once again, we have mixed data. The conclusion, however, was as follows. It was the consensus of the group that the renal tubular adenomas were related to compound administration since their frequency was not consistent with the historical controls and there is a trend indicating dose dependency. Then under other considerations, they also state this. The panel believes that additional sectioning of new blocks of male kidneys might help in the interpretation of the study results. And then at the very end of the document, here we go. In accordance with EPA proposed guidelines, the panel has classified glyphosate as a Category C oncogen. So that's where the C classification came in back in spring of 1985, although that specifically said oncogenic, not carcinogenic. Now, the fourth document here, I had to do a bunch of digging to find. I didn't see anyone else even referencing it online. So score one for the Walk a Mile project. It contains the most details available for the mouse study, and it does reveal kind of a mess in some of the other data. The control groups were all over the place for some of the lesions reported, which you can see on page four of the document. In fact, one of the control groups showed 15 out of 49 mice affected, while the high dose group showed the least affected of the four groups with only 7 of the 50 mice affected. And another weird thing, that there are places in here where the numbers don't match. Now, I don't know if it's just a timing issue, perhaps related to mortality, where maybe one of the mice died, so the group count was reduced by the time a specific condition was accounted for. I don't know, but it makes you wonder if someone wasn't trying to manipulate data here. And I'm not accusing anyone. I'm just saying something doesn't seem quite right. Bottom line, the rare tumor in 3 mice from the high dose group meant something to the EPA. And here, they also note that there were decreased body weights in male and female mice in the high dose as well, which they consider compound related. So to them, there was some significance here that needed to be addressed. All right, now we move on to the fifth document from December 4th of that same year, 1985. And here's where things really start to get interesting. Remember, the EPA suggested that additional sectioning of new blocks of the male kidneys might help in interpreting the study results more accurately. What they found was a small localized change in one kidney of the control group. Monsanto's quoted response was this. The pathology staff at Biodynamics and I, Dr. McConnell, reviewed the lesion and concurred that it may be representative of a developing tumor. So the EPA's Dr. Louis Kaja did his own microscopic examination and response, and this was his conclusion. With regard to the questionable male control kidney, it is my opinion that the presence of a tumor cannot definitely be established. My interpretation is similar to the conclusion of Biodynamics pathology staff and Dr. McConnell that the lesion may be a proliferative change, having the potential to lead to the development of a frank tumor. But as the tissue can be seen under the microscope as a small, well-demarcated focal cell aggregate, morphologically different from the healthy-looking surrounding kidney tissue, this morphological alteration does not represent a pathophysiologically significant change. Okay, now say that last sentence 10 times really, really fast. But seriously, that document kind of kicks off the war. And then just over a week later, in document number 6 from December 12th, the EPA announces the results of all the additional evaluations on recut kidney sections, and they found no additional tumors present. But the reevaluation also found 4 more mice who had chronic interstitial nephritis, a kidney disease that eventually leads to kidney failure. There were 3 times the number of mice affected in the high dose group as there were in the control group. So at the end of this document, it's noted that the issue was compound related. At this point, everything's kind of backfiring on Monsanto. And obviously the answer here is to just redo the study. But as you'll see, Monsanto adamantly did not want the study redone. So we move to doc number 7. Just a couple of months later, in February 1986, here the EPA asked for assistance from the FIFRA SAP. And what the heck is that? FIFRA is F-I-F-R-A. That's Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act. And SAP is just stands for the Scientific Advisory Panel from FIFRA. On page 5 of this document, there is a long paragraph that might just make your head explode. So let me sum it up for you to prevent that from happening, although I certainly encourage you to read all of it because this is a really interesting paragraph. And I mean that seriously, not sarcastically. First, they state that the control group tumor should be counted. And then they say that when the statistical analysis is age adjusted, no oncogenic effect of glyphosate is demonstrated using concurrent controls. They then proposed that glyphosate be classified as group D, meaning not classified, that there's not enough evidence either way at this point, and that there should be a data call-in for further studies in rats and or mice to clarify unresolved questions. So they say that glyphosate should not be in group C. They also mention historical control data and state that the historical control data could actually give reason for concern, like we talked about before, but that they feel using the concurrent control data is more prudent. Now, remember that because we're going to be back to it in a few here. So that all sounds fair enough when you think about it. I mean, 3 out of 50 mice had tumors. That's still only 6%. And their suggestion for doing more studies and or repeating the mouse study, well, when we're talking about something potentially causing cancer, I'm thinking it's kind of important to follow through here. And now Monsanto's heard that same call again from a second group that more data is needed. Instead, however, Monsanto then asked several doctors to respond directly to them regarding the mouse study, and they then submitted those responses to the EPA, which you can see in document number 8 from March of 1986. 4 doctors refuted the EPA's take on the study, and then an opinion issued by the PWG, which is the Pathology Working Group, also echoed the same sentiment. And the EPA's response was simple. This information will be submitted to the TB Ad Hoc Committee for evaluation to determine if concurrence is possible. Okay, so again, conflicting opinions, and we're talking about concerns over cancer potential, so let's redo the study, or let's come up with a couple of better studies. Let's do something. Instead, we see nothing. For nearly 3 years, we see nothing. The next significant document I could dig up was from June of 1989, and that's document 9 here on the list. In the background section of that document, it states the following. On November 10th, 1988, a meeting was held between EPA staff and representatives of Monsanto to discuss the agency's requirement that the mouse oncogenicity study with glyphosate be repeated. We can safely assume that request was floating out there the entire time because it was mentioned in multiple documents years earlier, but still, no compliance from Monsanto. Then, in this late 1988 meeting, they again bring up historical control data. Apparently, there were new people working in the EPA at this point because they didn't seem to remember that this was all discussed already. Back in February of 1985, we have it in document number 2 with all the details. So here's the EPA summary of Monsanto's position at this point. Monsanto stated that there were historical control data demonstrating that the incidence of mouse kidney neoplasms ranged from 0 to 7.1%. This incidence exceeded the incidence of 6% from the high dose group in the glyphosate study. Monsanto indicated that a repeat mouse oncogenicity study was not required. EPA stated that the historical control data should be submitted in order to reevaluate the agency's position on the repeat study. So there's someone asking Monsanto to submit the historical control data that they've had for years. And before I respond to that, let's look at the actual letter Monsanto wrote to the EPA in October of 1988. Here's a quote. Monsanto's position regarding this requirement has been and remains to be that there is no scientific justification for repeating the mouse oncogenicity study. And then a bit later, based upon the above discussion, Monsanto contends that there is no relevant scientific or regulatory justification for repeating the glyphosate mouse oncogenicity study. Wow, can you say non-compliance? Does anyone else find it disturbing that Monsanto could have a product on the market for nearly 15 years at this point? And for 5 years, it's been flagged as a potential cancer concern by the EPA? Yet, there's been no action taken? I mean, Monsanto can just avoid retesting for 4 or 5 years? And then they think they can just throw the same data back at the EPA from years ago and expect a free pass? Why wouldn't there have been a mandate? And I'm guessing EPA just doesn't have this kind of power, but I'd like to see a mandate that says, hey, you can get this study redone or get better studies done, or we can take glyphosate off the market as potentially unsafe until you do. And you know, in addition to that, let's have the EPA supervise the study, but Monsanto pay for it. That's how it should ethically work, but it doesn't. And instead, we see Monsanto refusing to supply the required safety studies, and then they go back to this historical data mess. And yes, we're talking about some of the same historical control data that 2 different documents mention as not supporting Monsanto's position whatsoever. with the last one going so far as to say it actually raised concern about the study they were trying to refute. But since they were so adamant about this control data exonerating them from any further studies, and basically anointing glyphosate as this super safe chemical, well, what the heck? Let's take a look at this historical data, shall we? Let's take a look. So, here's the absolutely positively most relevant data that they submitted. It's historical data from the same lab and for the same type of mice used in the study in question. And look at these numbers. There are 815 control mice in this data. And out of that 815, 3 had tumors. The study they are trying to refute showed 3 tumors out of 50 mice. Why would you even submit this kind of data and argue that it supports your case? Well, obviously, because you're trying for the smoke and mirrors approach. Instead of looking at the totals, Monsanto completely cherry-picked the data, which they love to accuse others of doing, by the way, as they just did to the World Health Organization. So, forgoing the actual 3 out of 815 number I just showed you, they suggest to the EPA that the occurrence in these historical controls ranges from 0 to 3.3%. Well, first of all, it was 6% in the study in question. So 3.3% doesn't help anyway. Second, in 12 out of the 14 studies with control data here, the percentage was a big fat zero. Zero control mice developed the tumor. Now, in one study, 2 out of 60 mice developed tumors. So there's your 3.3%. One study out of 14. In another study, there was 1 out of 54 mice, and that's 1.9%. But when you add up all the controls, 3 out of the 815 total, that's less than 0.4%. In other words, congratulations, Monsanto, you just resubmitted data that, again, actually supports the study you're trying so hard to refute. But their big one was on page 6 from Hazelton Labs, and I think this might have been new data, although I'm not sure because the EPA documents don't tell us, but have a look at this amazingly detailed data set that is supposed to be the end-all be-all for the mouse controversy. As you might expect, if you can't see this data because you're just listening to the podcast, then I'd go back and either watch the video or go to page 6 of document number 9 so you can see it, so you know what I'm talking about. But once you look at it, you'll understand this commentary. So as you might expect, here's how the EPA responded. Dr. Ward of Monsanto indicated that Hazelton was unable to provide any additional details, dates of study, supplier, pathologist, etc., about these particular historical controls. Therefore, in light of this telephone communication, Toxicology Branch concludes that these particular historical controls from F1 male mice cannot be used to substantiate the Monsanto position. Regardless of all that, though, here's the final conclusion of this document. Toxicology Branch concludes that a repeat of the mouse oncogenicity study is not required at this time. After the results of the new 2-year rat chronic toxicity and oncogenicity study are reviewed, Toxicology Branch will consider whether the repeat of the mouse oncogenicity study is required. Now, in defense of Monsanto, it looks like they started that rat study in late 1988, so it was probably already underway when these letters were flying back and forth. That doesn't excuse the years of pushback, however, and what essentially looks like their bullying of the EPA. But regardless, it meant that this new rat study, using the same rats vilified for long-term use in the famous Seralini study, by the way, would likely be the final evaluation piece on this whole glyphosate, is it a carcinogen or isn't it question. And we will delve into that on the next GMO Truth podcast, but for GMO Truth number 7 here, this was all about a mouse study that, time will tell, was either completely irrelevant, meaning that those 3 kidney tumors were just a fluke, or it will go down in history as the first ignored warning sign of serious kidney problems to come. I wish I could say more, but since the study was never redone, and heck, it's still never even been published, it's difficult to say anything else about it. With what you've heard today, though, what you can see in the documents themselves and from the data that we do have, you can at least say with conviction that you know the GMO truth. And that is it for podcast number 7. We are back in June with the rat studies and the final word on what happened at the EPA. In the meantime, if you have any questions on this that you want answered or anything you'd like to contribute yourself, either send an email to eric@walkamileproject.com or head over to the podcast page and click the orange Start Recording button on the right, where you can record a voice message and be heard on the next podcast yourself. And that's all courtesy of SpeakPipe, which is a really great service, by the way. So that's it for now. Thanks for listening, everyone. Talk to you in June. You've been listening to the Walk a Mile Project's GMO Truth Podcast. To stay up to date on new podcasts or to learn more and join in on our GMO investigation and upcoming feature film, head over to walkamileproject.com and sign up for free anytime, 24/7. And that is how we discover the truth and change the world together. There's a dream.